The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. It's me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Mombos, Colombia. Well, I can't say it's Bogota, 2,600 meters closer to the stars. I can say Mombos, about 10 meters above sea level, something like that. It's hot, it's sweaty, but it's been a good break from the capital city. And we're here with episode 202 of Columbia Calling, and I've got two very special guests on the show, and I'm quite excited to have them on the show, because a couple of young guys, what can I say, volunteering with the Peace Corps, the Cuerpo de Paz, and they're here in Mompos. They are the first representatives of the Peace Corps ever for Mompos in Bolivar, which is a really big deal. Correct me if I'm wrong later on, if I've got that wrong, with if there are people here in the 1970s or something. But in my era, let's say, they are the first Peace Corps volunteers. But before we launch into their stories, it's Aaron and James. Before we launch into their stories, I just want to give you guys a heads up that on the 30th of September at the Casa 95 Apartamentos in Bogota, there'll be the launch of a new guidebook that I've been working on with the good folk from Five Bogota, on an online travel agency by young people in Bogota. It's called Bogota Through the Five Senses, and it's like a selection of walking tours through various barrios in Bogota. So a different guidebook that we've just released, and there'll be other artists and cultural entrepreneurs there at this event on the 30th of September between 2 p.m. and 5 p.m. Photographers, musicians, playwrights, and so on. It's a new cultural event that we are launching this year in 2017. So that's my, let's say, some office admin to share with you this, on this episode at 202. But now, without further ado, we're here in Mompos, Colombia. It's probably closer to 30 degrees right now, which is the norm in this sultry town, a colonial town on the Magdalena River. Many of you will have heard of through this podcast. But welcome on the show, Aaron from Idaho. And James from Ohio. So you guys are here with the Peace Corps. You've been here a different amount of time. James, you arrived first, so just doing it that way. Tell us a little bit about yourself. You're from Ohio. Were you well traveled? Did you want to come to Colombia? I mean, why the Peace Corps?
That's a question I've been asked since the day I began talking about applying. Back when I applied, the Peace Corps application forum, where it was a place where you just applied to be a Peace Corps volunteer, and you can be thrown in any country doing any job. And I was super fortunate enough to get put into a place that speaks Spanish, and I would be teaching English, which is kind of why I wanted to join the Peace Corps. I am a teacher back in the States.
Right.
And I wanted to work with a Hispanic population, so I figured a great stepping stone would be to understand the culture and to communicate within their language. And cool. It just so happened to be that I'd be working in Colombia.
Nice. And what did you know about, let's say, Mompos or Colombia prior to coming here?
I did not know much. to answer your previous question, I never traveled. Colombia's. I did a two-week mission trip in Guatemala in 2012, but outside that, I barely made it out of my state before college. So this was a big step for me. I didn't have any Spanish background. I took it in high school, but I didn't take it seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And So I came here not really knowing the language, not really knowing the culture. I kind of had like a Rambo kind of environment of mine. I thought I'd be living in the mountains, thought I'd be very tropical, and was put into the coast. So.
Yeah, it's still tropical. I mean, but no mountains. I mean, you can see for miles here. It's flat like a nightmare. So, you're a graduate of Marist College, New York, and you're down here. So that, a shout out to alumni of your college. And it's excellent that you should come here. Excellent. And I thought I'd bring in a little bit of a trivia. There was a dreadful film made with Arnold Schwarzenegger called Collateral Damage. And in Collateral Damage, the rebel stronghold was actually in Mompos. It's actually known as Mompos. And it did more damage for the town during that period. And it's like the drug and kidnapping hideout and stuff. And that was, there's another story behind that, but I'll tell you at a later date. Anyway, so that's probably the image that you had in your head. Taught to you by Hollywood, let's say.
Absolutely.
And Aaron, well, welcome on Columbia Calling. It's a pleasure to have you here. You're originally from Idaho, but went to Tufts University. You're doing a different type of project here in Mompos. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing.
Yeah, so I'm working on a community economic development program, and that is a new pilot program for Peace Corps Columbia. When the Peace Corps returned to Columbia in 2010, initially the program was focused solely on English, mm-hmm. bilingualism, and so when the post started to get bigger, they also decided to pilot a community economic development program. So I work at a high school teaching entrepreneurship classes with a foundation doing something similar, and then I'm also working on a couple of small savings and loans programs.
That's very cool indeed. I mean, you know, how do you get involved in, let's say, in the high school teaching entrepreneurial sort of projects? How do you sit down and say, this is what we're going to do, or this is how we should think about it?
Yeah, the Peace Corps has a partnership with SENA, which is a vocational training program that's nationwide. And so through that partnership at high schools, 10th and 11th graders at particular high schools have opportunities to take technical classes. Mm-hmm. So in Mompos, the classes are focused on tourism and for good reason, obviously. And so it was a pretty natural fit, at least in some of the material that the students are working on fits really nicely with entrepreneurship. They're sort of complementary. And so just through coordination with the local SENA instructor.
So you plug into and say, where am I needed? How can I help out? Where can I do? And is that much the same for your English classes too? Or do you have something set, James, that I'll be teaching at the Alcaldía, at the town hall, or I'll be teaching at SENA, or I'll be teaching at this high school? How do you go about, let's say, finding the students for your classes?
Yeah, we were kind of, in our training, we were taught to have a needs-based assessment where we go into the community kind of with an open idea of what they need to get done, what they would like to have done. So I, of course, talked to the alcaldesa, I talked to the Secretaría de Turismo, our rector, the principal of our school, other community leaders or members that would be interested in English classes. Mm-hmm. Of course, I teach throughout the week at my high school, at my school that has preschool through 11th grade, the last grade of high school here in Columbia. Mm-hmm. And I also talk to owners of hotels, owners of restaurants to see if their employees would like to learn English. Mm-hmm. To be able to communicate with the foreign tourists that would be able to speak English.
Sure. Have anyone from my hotel asked for classes?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, I'm currently working with Lesbia on Sundays.
Okay, excellent. I think I knew that, but I like it when I know that there's some sort of, drive for these things. So you have, I mean, you keep yourselves busy. I mean, this is what it sounds like. But James, you arrived first, but Aaron, you got here second. You got here in November 2016, and I wouldn't recommend anyone arriving in a small town in the Caribbean coast, although we're 5 hours inland, but in November, because between November, December, and January, really nothing gets done at all. It's all about, the Christmas period, really. You expected to arrive here and get stuck in. How did you busy yourself?
It was definitely a challenge. I think, you know, I got here early November, and the school didn't open back up until mid-February. So I had a really long time of wanting to kind of get started with stuff, but also not really having the relationships that I needed to do that. Mm-hmm. And also not wanting to overcommit myself before I got really a better idea of what my school schedule was going to be. So it was definitely hard to strike a balance. Mm-hmm. I think I had to readjust what my definition of work was, certainly, because it was super important for me to really develop personal relationships. So mm-hmm. honestly, just going on a walk and stopping and saying hi to people on my walk, like I had to shift how I looked at that, and it was a really valuable experience in the end. It was certainly frustrating at times, but I don't think I would change it actually now looking back, because I think having that much downtime really allowed me to get to know people better.
Also, I mean, it really obliges you to get out there,
yeah,
because you are here for a purpose. You've got to get out there and do it. It's not about sitting around. And I mean, you could read all the classics if you wanted
right.
to, but there's a time and a place for that
right.
too. You're about getting involved in the local community. And I mean, you had a level of Spanish before you arrived here, so that enabled your conversation. And so who would you talk to first? Would you stop in on bakeries or other places, sort of village stores, and chat away? And ay, mira la gringa.
Yeah, it's interesting. In Monfos, a lot of volunteers, Peace Corps volunteers, are in towns where there aren't tourists.
Yeah.
And so for us, I think it's a little different, because people look at us and think that we're tourists. And so it takes a while
yeah.
to get people to finally realize, like, no, I live here. Like, I'll be here for 2 years, not just for 2 days. So what I really tried to do was just, like, pick a few places to frequent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have a place where I always drink juice, and I have a place where I always buy bread and stuff like that. And those kind of establishing routines like that with certain people really helped.
I think that's a useful thing for future Peace Corps volunteers to think, you know, pick out these places
mm-hmm.
and become a regular, maybe not the regular drinking hole or somewhere, but a regular in a bakery, in a juice bar and stuff. But James, you had no Spanish, well, high school Spanish.
Right, yeah.
So you could ask for a juice and things like
that. No, I couldn't. When I first came down here, we were given a little interview with our host coordinator,
yeah.
our host family coordinator, and she had asked me, you know, describe yourself in Spanish to give her a good idea of what kind of host family she should place me with.
Right.
And the only thing I could say was, yo alto.
Yo alto. Because I tall or I halt.
Yeah. So I couldn't conjugate. I couldn't really remember verbs. So when I got down here, it was a headache for a couple months trying to translate word for word what I wanted to say.
Now you dream in Spanish, of course.
Yeah.
In costeño Spanish, no less. I have to say, you know, I've been here in Colombia for 10 years, Latin America for 17. There are times where I just get complete brain freeze with coastal Spanish. That's just not Spanish. You know, they talk to you, it's like they've got a boiled egg in their mouth. No, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. It must still occur to you guys. I mean, you're immersed much more than I am, because I come and go. But it's coming along. But I want to know, though, when you get back to the States and then you go back to, like, your favorite Mexican restaurant and stuff, you're going to order in Spanish, and they're going to look at you with this weird accent. It's going to be fun.
Yeah.
You'll have something to talk about, certainly. It's excellent. But I see both of you here, and I see there's an enthusiasm. You're certainly not bored, and I'm sure the work comes and goes. I'm sure there's a lot of downtime too, but then that's part of this challenge, isn't it? It's about making it worthwhile. As we finish this first segment of the show, tell us a little bit, either one of you, it's like, has it so far, James, you've got 6 months left, Aaron, you've got a further year, but has Monpos and has this program lived up to your expectations?
I think that I wouldn't change anything about my experience yet. And I think it lived up to maybe expectations that I didn't know that I had, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It certainly wasn't what I pictured in my head, I think. But I also tried to keep my expectations somewhat tempered just to avoid any problems. And I think Monpos is so beautiful. James and I often will be like sitting in a plaza or something, and just it like occurs to me how beautiful this place is and how unique it is to have such a long time here in a town like this. So I think certainly there are times when, like you said, the work comes and goes, and there are weeks when it feels like everything gets canceled or like nothing goes as planned. But, you know, I've had enough good experiences too that it doesn't upset me as much as it used to. Yeah.
Thanks. I'm done for you, James.
Yeah, I kind of came in. I think most volunteers come in as dreamers, as people that really think they're going to change the world, and I'm certainly no exception. And you come in and you have to redefine your definition of success and, like Aaron said, your definition of work. And again, I wouldn't change one thing about Montpauls or my work here with the Peace Corps.
This is very positive indeed. That's very positive indeed. I'm not holding a gun to their heads or anything, listeners. It's like they're coming up with this information themselves. So let me take this moment just to say thank you very much, James and Aaron, for sharing so far a little bit about their time here in Montpauls with the Peace Corps. It's, you know, Colombia is not an easy place. It's an interesting place at the very least. There's a lot of challenges to be confronted here and bested, but at the same time, we can all pitch in and we can do things that do make a difference. And people will be talking about you guys after your departure. They will go, you remember Aaron and stuff. But now in this age of mass immediate communication, you will be able to stay in contact. It's not like letter writing and anything else from the past, my past. But Facebook or WhatsApp message, you'll be able to drop a line to your friends made here. And, you know, it doesn't seem so far away anymore. We're going to take a short break. This is episode 202 of Columbia Calling, and we'll be right back with these two guys and talk further about their experiences here in the Peace Corps in Montpauls, Colombia. Thank you for listening. And we're back. This is Columbia Calling. I'm Richard McCall. Episode 202 of Columbia Calling. We're here in Montpauls, Bolivar. So, yes, 5 hours south from Cartagena and Barranquilla. Follow the river, the Magdalena River, south from these cities, and you'll come across this colonial town, a properly authentic colonial town. We've just finished the annual jazz festival that was took over this last weekend. We had, it wasn't jazz, Eddie Herrera, for the merengue artist from the Dominican Republic, singing, and some reggaeton star, I believe, Nacho. I didn't stay out for that one, but I did like the Cuban jazz artist Pedrito Martinez. Hey, I thought that was some serious quality. So, a real time to visit, and also an interesting time to visit this town, because it's a town, let's say, that doesn't get too many tourists, but we're working on that. But to see so many people arrive, you know, an extra something like 7,000 people coming into Montpauls for a jazz festival is quite remarkable. And when I opened up my place in 2008, I never for once even considered that there was going to be a cultural event that would take 3 days and be held in front of my little sort of bed and breakfast, which it's really just quite good, I have to say. Open the door and you fall into a concert. So pretty fun indeed. And, you guys, you've been here for, you've spent longer here in one sitting than I ever have. I come and go. The longest I spent here was about 6 months on the go. And then I probably rubbed too many people up the wrong way, voiced my politics on an occasion or two. So talking about tricky situations here in the town, have you found yourself perhaps saying the wrong thing? I don't know, let's say the U.S. election's rolling around. People probably asked your opinions on what was going on. I'm not asking for your politics. I'm just saying, you know, what kind of reactions were you getting from people here in Montpauls at the election of President Trump, for example, or what's going on now? Are you being asked to explain the taking a knee that is taking place, and now President Trump decided to take on the whole NFL, MLB, everything else? Are you being asked about these things? It must be interesting.
I think during the election, I was asked more, you know, if I'm going to vote for Donald Trump, or why do people vote for Donald Trump, more than any other question I've ever been asked in my time in Colombia. It was definitely a hot topic. People that never talked to me before were coming up to me and asking me. So it was,
that is cool.
Yeah. And in the Peace Corps, we don't give our personal opinions, we stay politically neutral. So it was a good discussion to talk about the politics of United States and kind of reflect on the politics of Colombia. They're not too dramatically different in the fact that there's a two-party system. You know, you're not always in love with both, and sometimes you have to select which one falls more aligned to you, even though it may not be the perfect candidate.
Interesting, interesting. I mean, you know, I find that people here tend to vote along sort of just what the family believes in and what their neighbor tells them. But if I told a Colombian, well, no, actually, as a kid, I once voted for the Liberal Party in England, and I once voted for the Labour Party. I can't say I ever voted for the Conservative Party, but my voting pattern has jumped around with what I felt was most important for the country at that time. I don't feel that that's the case in Colombia. It's like, well, you know, we are this. And they stick to it. I don't know, how's your experience been, Aaron, with all this?
Yeah, it's definitely been interesting. I got here just a couple, I arrived to Mompox just a few days before the election. So it's definitely a unique time to arrive to a new place and be sort of working with the U.S. government. It was definitely interesting, and I personally have a really hard time. It's very, very hard for me to be neutral. Mm-hmm. So that's been a challenge, and I have to think about like who I'm speaking with. And you know, with certain people, I feel like I've developed close personal relationships, and I have felt comfortable expressing and talking about politics with people, knowing that they understand that those are my personal views, and that they're not, you know, that they're not necessarily those of other volunteers. But one thing that I thought was really funny after the election was that until you can explain the Electoral College to someone in Spanish, you don't speak as good of Spanish as you thought. Like, I thought that I was at a level where I wouldn't get stumped by questions, and trying to explain the Electoral College was a mental exercise, to say the least.
I personally think that's an awesome example. I personally think that Colombia should have an Electoral College for the weighting of population between the departments here. Why should... You know, I mean, Antioquia obviously should get a heavy weighting for the amount of people there. And Valpez, you know, let's say you get one, Antioquia 25. You know, I think there should be that sort of thing. So I would put it in that terms. But that's a really good example altogether. Did you have to explain the Electoral College?
Yeah, of course. My Spanish, I would usually refer them to Aaron.
Okay, very good. You just sort of, yeah, well, you know, ask the gringo. Okay. So I bet then you got very good at it. I found that my Spanish reached its zenith when I was sick and in hospital and having to explain what I needed. I think that was the best moment. I say it wasn't the best moment. It was the worst of times, but the best Spanish I've ever spoken. It was like, oh God, I really am dying. Talking about that, that's I mean, that is actually fascinating. I hadn't thought about that, the explanation of the Electoral College. I mean, I still have to explain it to people. So, and of course, yeah, about your personal politics, it's tough because, you have to keep it quiet. And here, this town is an interesting one. I mean, Colombia is so very polarized right now. How, if it's going to go in 2018, the elections, and there was a whole lot of politicking going on here over the jazz festival weekend. It's been very interesting to watch. The governor, all the different mayors from the local area were visiting the governor, the guy in charge of 36 different towns, who's cousin to the governor, was here as well, making his presence felt. They were taking signatures downstairs for voting and so on and so forth. So, you know, we're into September 2017, and yet, well, we're not clear what's going to happen, but there is a mobilization taking place around the country, and so much so in these small towns, which don't seem like a lot, but there's a heavy history behind a lot of this area. So it's going to be, I think, perhaps the most interesting, if not fraught, elections in Colombia's contemporary history, 2018. And you'll be here at the tail, well, just as it begins, and you'll be here through it. So you'll have seen, you'll have seen some interesting moments. But in terms of politics as a whole in Colombia, I mean, you've both been here for the accords and you know, the peace being signed with the FARC, and you're in an interesting situation because, I mean, while the FARC has been felt in this region, and I put that delicately, let's say the Montes de Maria up nearer to Magangue, Mompox itself has never really been directly affected by the left-wing guerrillas. And the paramilitary groups, the right-wing groups who've now then evolved into different, let's say, newly emerged criminal gangs under various different names, they have a presence, but at the same time, there is a suggested presence rather than it's in-your-face presence. It's the aggression that's there. And it must be interesting for you guys, you know, to be dropped into a situation where you basically got to take it all in a short period of time. And this piece, dialogues, I found in Mon Pos, and I'm saying this, you don't guys have to say this, that most people tend to regard, let's say, the peace deal, the signed-off peace deal with the FARC, with great suspicion, and it tends to be more of a liberal urban elite who are far more behind the deal. I don't know what you are allowed to say on this position as a Peace Corps volunteer, or how would you say? Let me rephrase that. How would you interpret Mon Pos's position regarding what's been going on?
I think that the Montpellinos are extremely proud that this is a pueblo of peace. You know, the flag of Montpellinos, they say that it was before the flag of Switzerland was initiated, but they're the same, and a lot of it is representative of a town of tranquility and peace. Mm-hmm. I think there's, of course, a wide variety of people that could be, you know, for Uribe or for Santos or for peace or not for peace. But the idea of peace in Montpellier is something that they're proud of. And although maybe I haven't had as in-depth conversations with the people on what their thoughts of the peace accords are, I think that in general, they are all on board with peace in general. Colombia is what we want. Maybe not necessarily that first vote was the way they wanted to get it.
Mm. Interesting. Yeah, definitely. You know, thoughts,
yeah, I agree with James. I think one thing that isn't necessarily well understood, in my opinion, from what I've seen on social media or had conversations with people still back in the United States about the peace agreement, is that people aren't saying no to peace. They're saying no to a specific peace agreement and specific terms of that agreement. So I think that's definitely a good way of looking at it, because Mompos, in my conversations, everybody that I've spoken to wants peace. It's just a matter of, like, how do we get there?
Yeah, interesting. And, of course, it's an interesting situation to be in when we've got Uribe's daughter-in-law being a Montpellina, and Uribe himself owning a huge farm between here and El Banco, which, interestingly enough, used to belong to a narco-trafficante called El Mágico. So there you have it. It's called La Estrella. That's why the bridge between Botón de Leyva and Huamal, I don't know if you've traveled that way, it's a wonderful bridge that appears out of nowhere. It was made before even I got here, but before, when I was started coming here, it was still a rutted road, huge holes and everything, not paved. And then you'd arrive at this oasis-style bridge across the river. They realized that Uribe built it to move his cattle from one side of the farm to the other. So there you go. And that's the only reason it was built. But now it connects Magdalena and Bolivar. And yes, long may it last. Talking about peace, talking about security, of course, you guys have had no issues here in Montpellier. It really is a town where, I mean, honestly, I think you could sleep out in the streets with your camera hanging out of your pocket and nothing would happen. But how did your parents react to you coming down to Colombia and being put in the middle of nowhere?
Yeah, my family, of course, you know, like myself and probably like most Americans, had the idea that Colombia is, you know, a cocaine, kidnapping, kind of the Pablo Escobar era Colombia, which, of course, that's not where we are today. So they were all very nervous. You know, they thought Costa Rica sounded a lot better. They thought that, you know, I could be a Peace Corps volunteer anywhere, but I fell in love with Colombia. And, you know, through FaceTiming with them, through Skyping and sending emails and pictures, especially of Montpellier, they came to the conclusion that they now wanted to visit Colombia, and they did this past July for 5 days, went to Cartagena and Barranquilla. Unfortunately, did not have the opportunity to come here. But now I think that they are, you know, some of the best ambassadors that Colombia could have, coming back to the States and sharing all their beautiful pictures, all the stories When they first got into Colombia, I was still in Los Angeles for a wedding. So they had, and none of them speak Spanish, and none of them have traveled outside the States. So Colombia was the first place they arrived, and they got out of the airport and were just in shock. They didn't know what to do. And, you know, a typical costeño came up and spoke a little bit of English and helped them into their cab, got them to their hotel, gave them a little tour, and they immediately felt at home. They immediately felt safe, that all of their stereotypes have been uprooted, and they were originally going to stay in the hotel until I got back. And that night they went to the old city because they felt so empowered and welcomed to Colombia. So
that's a nice story. That's a nice story. I'm glad that happened. So someone basically adopted them from the airport. They just saw her and was like, these people need my help. Like, that's a Colombian superpower. That's excellent. And your parents have actually been to, well, no, they've not been, have they?
Were
coming.
Hopefully next year.
Next year they'll come down. And of course, Mom Post will roll out the red carpet for them. Did you guys ever feel that coming to this small town, I mean, let's say 40,000 plus, but only around 7,000 here in the Colonial Center, but ever think that you were going to be exotic? Because you are exotic. You are unusual here.
Yeah.
I definitely thought that it would, I mean, I have traveled a fair amount in Latin America before, so I understood that, you know, we call it kind of like the fishbowl effect, where everyone's kind of interested in what you're doing and what you're eating and what you're wearing. And it's all like kind of interest. I definitely expected it to wear off a little bit more than it has. And it has to some extent, like more people know me and know that we're, you know, living here for an extended period of time. So it's a little bit less curious, but it still is. It still does shock me.
But I'm sure, you know, they look at you, they know the tall gringo or whatever, the La Mona, you know. But it's, you know, my experience of that is, I started here in late 2007, early 2008. And when I started doing the Casa Maria and renovating four rooms to start with, I've only just found out this week that certain people of the, let's say, business or upper class or vocal community in Mompos went up to the mayor's office, the mayor of that time, and said, we have to stop this. We have to stop the foreigner because it's going to be the worst thing that happens to Mompos because it's going to bring drugs and prostitution to the town. Anyway, so I'm finding out who said that, but I actually know. So everyone was staring at the gringo. I mean, absolutely everything I did, being the only gringo in town. And then 2 years later, Walter from El Fuerte came, who is an incredibly able, well-traveled person, but so much more eccentric. It was wonderful. That glare just moved straight off. Because he used to wear robes and things. He looked a bit like Obi-Wan Kenobi at times. And suddenly it's like, I was like, thank God for Walter, you know, that shifts. But I mean, I'm sure you're still stared at, though, James. and you know, so this is, but it is a fishbowl effect, as you say, and it's just unusual. And even tourism, despite the fact that it's growing, it's still unusual. You know, it's still something that's a novelty here in Colombia. In Colombia, and in some places, not so much. Cartagena, I mean, it's your dime a dozen. But Mompos we're out there. I wouldn't even call it the second wave or the third wave of places to visit in Colombia because it's just not difficult to get to, but you have to organize coming here. And so that makes it different. And I mean, I guess, is there anything that, I mean, are there like practices that you would do at home, like going jogging or doing yoga that you do here and people just still look at you funny or something?
Yeah, absolutely.
They just don't get it.
Yeah, it's definitely different. When I tried to run a few times here and it's a very interesting experience. Sometimes people think that there's like that I'm sick or that I'm running away from something, and they're like, "Why is your face so red?" Things like that, you know.
Why is your face so red? Because it's so blisteringly hot all the time.
Right. No, it's definitely that. Some things like I'm vegetarian. That's a very foreign concept to people here.
But you eat chicken. Doesn't make it vegetarian.
definitely interesting.
That's got to be tough. I have to say, it's got to be tough. But I also imagine, as you know, and I'm not don't want to put this into a difficult situation, but it's a very macho society. You running around, let's say, you know, I would imagine you get the odd catcall and indecent utterances out there on the highway and everywhere else. I mean, it's something to think about because it is that macho here.
Yeah.
And it's not going to change anytime soon. That's the unfortunate reality. We are here as visitors. I live here, but we're here as visitors. There's a cultural norm here. And as much, if I can change something, let's say within my own family, my extended family, my wife's family, then hopefully then it's the next family. But without not standing on my soapbox and trying to make that difference. But have you got any, let's say, and as we wind down this, it's been really interesting, but as we wind this down, any examples of when you've been a real fish out of water or made an incredible error, a cultural error, or something incredibly positive that you wanted to share as we wind this down?
I have a funny story of when I started off here and my Spanish wasn't that good. I needed to get home and there was a group of moto taxistas, and I was thinking, translating in my head of how to ask them if they could give me a ride. And it came out, puedes montarme, which is, could you ride me?
Yes.
And they all looked at me like I was crazy and started laughing. And I said it a couple more times until they finally figured out what I was trying to say. And once I figured out how to say it correctly, I just could not believe
what
I had said.
They probably remind you of this fact to this date. Do you remember the time? Do you remember that time? It's like, then you endeared yourself to them, of course.
Yeah, and those are just more friends, you know, more people looking out for me and you know, give me a ride anytime.
I think so. It's been a really fun conversation with the two of you, and I wish you both the best in this, your final 6 months and your final, well, another year. You're halfway through. I'm not saying final, it's a whole other year. I mean, really, it's got to be such a phenomenal experience, you know, just having finished college and coming out here and taking it on, and it's you know, this makes you worldly, and it gets, teaches one, I would like to say, a great deal of humility. My experience was not a two-year deal. I just did 3 months in Ukraine when it was recently, it became independent, but it's stuck with me to this day. You know, I pick up a newspaper, and if there's an article, which there genuinely is now, about the Ukraine, I'll read it and remember and think back to the host family with whom I stayed, Olga, of course, and her son Vladimir, of course, and the cat and everything. And that reflection, it makes me incredibly nostalgic. And this will happen to you. I mean, this is a real life-forming experience to hear. And I have good friends who spent time in the Peace Corps in Armenia and in Guatemala and other places, and they just keep on raving about it. In fact, you're going to become bores. You know, that time I was in Colombia, that time I was in Montpos, you're going to be bores, but that's what it's all about. So let me just say thank you to both of you, to Aaron and to James, for sharing this conversation about your time here in Montpos. And incredibly positive. And on that final note, do we know, once you are off, will we get another Peace Corps volunteer? How does it work?
Yeah, so they're doing some evaluations, and I'm not exactly 100% sure, I can't confirm, but the idea is to have a Peace Corps volunteer here for 2 years and three sessions of that. So a total of 6 years is the PES plan, at least the Practical English for Success. So I would be the first 2 years, and then hopefully another two and another two.
Excellent. And on your project as well, the economic, what's it called again, the Community Economic Development Project.
Yeah, I think the idea is the same. It's a six-year cycle, basically.
Okay, to see through some projects,
right,
to make sure there's fruition there,
right,
and stuff.
Yes. It takes a long time to get things going, so it makes sense. You know, first you have to build the foundation, and that's what we're doing, and then hopefully people after us can build off of it.
Perhaps it takes longer here, too. Yeah. Anyway, this has been Columbia Calling. I've been Richard McCall in episode 202. I know you've enjoyed the show. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be on next week. We're going to be recording at the cultural event that I mentioned to you at the beginning of the show. It's called a Movable Fiesta, a play on Hemingway's Movable Feast. Anyway, so foreigners and Colombians with cultural goods, let's say, to promote. I will be promoting my book, Bogota Through the Five Senses. So I hope to see you there. September the 30th, 2 till 5 at the Casa 95 Apartamentos. Very easy to find. Thank you again for listening. That's me signing off for today. Bye-bye.
This is your moment. Your moment to move forward and make progress. It's time to see where an education can take you. For over 130 years, Strayer University has been at the forefront of change, offering programs that help students like you get ahead and stay ahead so you can keep striving. Visit strayer.edu to learn more. Strayer University is certified to operate in Virginia by CHEV.